This is the Max Kellerman Show. Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio.
Yes, the Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Also, check me out on the ESPN app and Sirius XM Channel Ada. I'm already on to Dana White. I combined 80 and Dana into Ada. Sirius XM Channel 80 is what I'm trying to say. Dana White coming on in a few to talk UFC 263. I'll get his thoughts on Mayweather versus Jake Paul, too. He's had some choice words for exhibitions. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. The Max Kellerman Show is presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests, join me on the Goodyear Hotline. Donovan Mitchell scored more than Kawhi and Paul George combined. And Rudy Gobert. That was a clutch play. I'll tell you what. I felt like Clippers are going to hit this shot. They're going to win in overtime. And they made Kawhi give up the ball. They made Paul George give up the ball. But they were making the correct passes. Found Monty Morris in the corner. Shot fake. I thought lost Gobert. I thought he was going to get it off. I thought it looked pretty good when it left his hand. And then Gobert got his fingertip on the ball. And that preserved all the work that Donovan Mitchell did. Slow start for Mitchell in the first half. But he poured it on in the second half. Ended with 45 points. He had a 57-point game in the playoffs last year. Another like a 51-point game. A 44-point game. He went bananas last year against Denver. He and Jamal Murray put on a show for the ages. A duel for the ages. Which Jamal Murray won. Because Mike Conley was really bad in the playoffs last year. He didn't really have his feet wet on that Utah team yet, it didn't seem like to me. And Jamal Murray with Jokic, it was too much, and they won. But this year, the way Mike Conley looked, the way Jordan Clarkson looked in the sixth man role, and they just had a lot. They got a lot in Utah. And it's a little bit different, except Conley goes down. And that's when you don't have your crime partner in the backcourt, when you now have to do two jobs instead of one. Like, what are you going to do? Donovan Mitchell showed up like a superstar. You know, and he's one of these guys. In the regular season, he's an all-star. And in the playoffs, he's an MVP. I respect that. Because some guys go the other way. Like Paul George. Paul George goes the other way. He's not an MVP in the regular season, but he's an all-star plus. He's not just like your common all-star. He's a little more than that. He's sometimes referred to incorrectly as a superstar. But he's an excellent two-way player, a great two-way player. But in the playoffs, he's never even quite himself. Like, it'd be nice if he could elevate, but if Paul George could just stay himself. So what's Paul George? Paul George is an efficient scorer, 22 to 24 points a game most years, right? If you'd say, what's a Paul George stat line, right? 46% from the field, 38% from three, let's say, 23 points, something like that, right? Like, that sounds like Paul George. Can you even do that in the playoffs with real defense? That's not a great, it's just like a typical Paul George kind of average. That's what he averages, give or take. Some rebounds, some assists. He gave you 20, he came alive in the fourth quarter, but he gave you 20 points. Yeah, he wasn't quite himself even yesterday. And to be honest, the Clippers are going to need Paul George. If they want to get out of the West, they need him to be a little more than himself. You'd like Paul George. Oh, he's usually a 23-point guy. What if he's a 25, 27-point guy in the playoffs? Because Donovan Mitchell goes from, like, in regular season, Paul George is better than Donovan Mitchell. Regular season, he is. He's longer. He's a better defender. He's better. And in the playoffs, it's not close. Donovan Mitchell turns himself into a superstar. Every sport has guys like this, by the way. And as much debunking as guys like Bill James have done about clutch hitting in baseball, there are clutch players. There are. We know them. Even if you can't prove that, like, Derek Jeter or someone like that was, they're like pitchers. It's easier to prove. Who consistently, when it mattered most, showed up. Curt Schilling, Fernando Valenzuela, El Duque, all like these pitchers who, under normal circumstances, that are at a certain level, whatever that level is, from good to great. When it mattered most, they became, you know, John Smoltz became super great. Mariano Rivera, probably the best example of that. Sandy Koufax. And that's what Donovan Mitchell is. He's normally an all-star. When it matters most, he's a superstar. And Paul George is the opposite. Paul George is All-star plus, when it matters most, he's not an all-star. The Sixers even up the series with the Hawks. You know who is an MVP when it matters most? Joel Embiid. Embiid is a guy who, the only reason he's not MVP this year is because he missed too many games. Jokic played a full season. Otherwise, Embiid would have been MVP. But he missed a lot of games, whatever. Torn meniscus going into this series. Diagnosed. They're not wondering about it. He has a torn meniscus. 39 points in game one. And I was kind of mad at Doc because I'm like, Doc, you wasted the performance by almost a 300-pounder, a 7-foot 300-pounder, just 280 pounds, you know, like on a torn meniscus, a giant who's a wide body. That's a lot of stress on that torn meniscus, isn't there? You wasted 39 points by playing this all-bench unit that was killed all game whenever they were in? But then Doc did something. He made sure there was at least one starter playing at all times during this game, all 48 minutes. There was never a single second with just an all-bench unit. And Embiid scored 40. So now the question is, wait a minute, was that a waste of a 39-point performance by Embiid, or is this just who he is and who he's going to be in this series or in these playoffs? He's going to give you like 40 a night. There's really, like, who's going to stop Embiid from scoring 40 a night? And by the way, no, Simmons can't shoot, but Seth Curry and these guys can make you pay if you double Embiid. And Embiid can shoot it from the outside for a guy his size, and he can post up, and he is a willing passer. If you double Embiid too early, he is going to make you pay. Same thing too late. He's either going to find the open man or he's going to score on you. High basketball IQ. Joel Embiid, you guys got to win. How are you feeling?
You know, I love all these guys, and he's one of them, and you know, I believe in all of them because I want to win it all, and I'm going to need them to do so. So, you know, I'm extremely happy for him. But, you know, series is only 1-1. There's nothing to really be happy about. You just got to, you know, try to go over there and, you know, win both and take one at a time.
Meantime, according to Basketball Reference, Embiid, 40 points, 13 boards in 34 minutes, 40 seconds. So under 35 minutes. 40 points, 13 boards in under 35 minutes. First player in the Basketball Reference database to post those numbers playing 35 or fewer minutes. Not just in the playoffs, apparently. Period. Ever. Seth Curry is the first player in Sixers history to make at least 5 3-pointers in consecutive playoff games. By the way, notice how Daryl Morey gets to Philadelphia. Everyone assumes, oh, he's going to bring Harden. Couldn't get that done. But look at who he picked up in the offseason, like quickly. He did this in like a quick series of moves, a flurry of moves. No one earth-shattering or like no real center cornerstone piece, but picks up immediately. Seth Curry, Danny Green, Dwight Howard. Think those guys are paying dividends? Dana White! UFC president on the Goodyear Hotline, Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio. Dana,
buddy,
what's going on? But you got a good rematch on your hands.
Oh, I'm so excited! Yeah, the top three fights on this card are incredible, and then obviously, you know, there's some other really incredible fights sprinkled out throughout the undercard. So, sold out. Our third event sold out. In Arizona, and we broke the record. We broke our own record and almost doubled it. So it's good to be back, man, with fans.
Yeah, it is good to be back with fans. And now, by the way, the CDC's guidance with twice vaccinated people is go ahead, live your life. No masks, indoors or out, whatever. It'll be nice to get back to that. Dana, I want to focus on the main event. That's the main attraction here. It's a rematch. It was a close call for Adesanya the first time. I thought Vittori is the kind of, like, the way he throws punches, if you ever studied any Krav Maga, right? Like, his punches, even though it doesn't look like it, he looks wide, but he's able to punch inside and simultaneously use those strikes with his hands as defense. He's like, he doesn't look it, but he's tricky. He gives the other guy a lot to deal with all the time. And Adesanya barely got by him the first time. How do you see the rematch playing out?
I agree. He's got heavy hands. He's got a great chin. He's not afraid to get in the pocket and bang with anybody. And he's comfortable no matter where the fight goes. If he wins, he's the first ever Italian world champion for the UFC. And obviously for Adesanya, tried to move up the light heavyweight. Didn't work out for him. He's been dominant at middleweight, and he's trying to retain that title on Saturday.
There's so much always at stake, talking to Dana White, UFC president, of course, Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio. It's the major leagues of mixed martial arts, the UFC. And there's always so much at stake. So you take a guy like Adesanya, and in a sport where everyone's a de facto one-punch knockout artist, because you're a little bit out of place, they're going to isolate a limb, hyperextend it, you'll tap out, they'll get your wind, they'll hit you with a shot to knock you out. So, like, it's always high stakes. It's a high wire act. It's a tightrope act. Always a lot of drama, right? But I think about a guy like Adesanya. A second ago, it's like, wait, is he the best pound-for-pound fighter in the world? Is that where he's heading? Now he moves up in weight, doesn't work out, comes back down, and all of a sudden it goes from, like, Adesanya's on top of the world, who's ever going to beat him, to, ooh, he better win this fight. Like, and he might not. This guy almost beat him the first time. And then where is he if he loses? A lot at stake for this guy, Dana.
So true. Absolutely right. And that's in everyone. I mean, you're absolutely right. Then you go down to Figueiredo and Moreno. Those two had one of the best fights of the year last year.
Right.
It went to a majority draw, and here they go again. Figueiredo is the champion trying to, greatest flyweight fight of all time last year. They're going to bang it out again on Saturday night. Who wins that one? Then you got Diaz coming back.
And
he's taking
Edwards.
On the number three ranked welterweight in the world, trying to get himself back into title contention. So you're right. I mean, every fight, as you go through the card, there's so much at stake.
You know, and it's funny because since the UFC controls that many top fighters, you as a, really, and your job is, UFC is a promotional outfit, but it feels like the league, like the major league, right? It's as though one promoter in boxing had a dominant position to the point where no one else really saw the other promoters as majors, only this one promoter. Well, in that case, you don't have to be scared to make matchups, because if you have some big star and they lose, okay, you have a rematch, and you match up against someone else. Like, what... But on the other hand, you have to develop stars.
It's the way it's supposed to be. It's the way it's supposed to be. That way you can put on all the best fights in the world with the best fighters in the world. Whoever wins, wins, and you move on to the next fighter. I mean, it's literally, this thing was built because I looked at the system that boxing had and said it was broken, and this is how you fix it. And the best always fight the best. And when the guy makes it and becomes a world champion, he got there because he fought his way through the top 15.
Yeah, there's no paper champions.
The number one guy.
No paper champions in the UFC. Okay, Dana White on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio. Dana, I want to talk to you about something because you brought up boxing. Early on in the UFC's history, when Zuffa bought it and we had dinner with all those UFC fighters you invited me to 20-something years ago, and Couture and everyone was there, and I always presumed that you invited me to that because I was not hostile, as many boxing people in the media were, toward the UFC. I like mixed martial arts. I like combat sports. And I thought, hey, this is good. This actually, why is boxing defensive about this? This is great. They're creating new fans. Invite them to boxing, too, and it's all good. But I heard you make comments recently about these exhibitions with guys like the Paul brothers that I thought, huh, Dana sounds a little bit like boxing type sounded about the UFC years ago. Where are you on the Floyd Mayweather, Logan Paul type exhibitions?
Yeah, that's not really true. And the reason that I invited you 20 years ago is because I've been trying to steal you from boxing for 20 years. Yeah. Number one. Number two, the way that I look at the thing with the Paul brothers, there's always going to be a market for that. There's always going to be, I don't know if you remember, a couple years ago, Bieber said he wanted to fight Tom Cruise, and everybody went crazy. Everywhere I went, that's all anybody ever asked me. And I was saying the other day, imagine if Kim Kardashian came out and said she wanted to fight Amanda Nunes.
Right.
It would be the biggest pay-per-view of all time. So there's always going to be a market for these type of fights.
Sure.
And, you know, I don't think it hurts the sport. I don't think it helps the sport. I don't think it's one way or the other.
I got it. I see what you're saying. In context, I understand. You're not sounding defensive. You're just giving your analysis. But let me say something about the Paul brothers that I like. They love boxing. They can monetize their social media followings other ways. They respect the sport. They train as hard as they can. They fight as hard as they can. And they make big events. Like, let's take your Kim Kardashian Nunez example. Let's say Nunez was 45 years old, hadn't fought in a while. Kim Kardashian was much younger, much bigger, trained hard for a couple years, and they fought an exhibition. Would I think Kim has a chance to win? Of course not. Would I watch? Yeah, I would. I would. I have to admit I would.
And the difference is everybody would. You know what I mean? You'd pull in people that would never buy a regular fight. You would pull in a completely different crowd.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I get it. And I agree with you. Yeah. If you take some of my interviews, what these guys do now is they'll do a 20-minute interview with you and chop it up into pieces so everything gets taken out of context.
Thank God, listen, Dana. Thank God, or else I wouldn't make a living. Like, this is, like, that, yeah. Thank God, yeah. Yeah, I'm sorry, you were saying?
And you know, and I've had my moments with the Jake Paul kid, but, listen, anytime I see somebody out there that has taken something and figured out a way to make money at it, good for them.
Yeah, good for them, especially if they're not cheating the public. Like, when James Toney fought, who did James Toney fight?
And he Couture.
What's that?
Couture.
Yeah, Couture, right. James Toney fought Couture, right. And Toney came and clearly hadn't trained a day of MMA or of like any kind. You know, thought he was just going to walk in and do whatever and had to tap out in 30 seconds. Of course, of course. But when someone comes in and respects it enough to train and fight as hard as they can, I like it. You know, like, I think it's the right example to set. Meantime, talking about, like, all the stars in the UFC, McGregor, Poirier 3? You want to talk to me about that?
Sure, yeah. I mean, that's coming up. It's going to be a massive fight this summer. And, you know, again, a lot on the line for this fight. For Poirier, he's the number one ranked guy in the world in that division. McGregor's the number 5 ranked guy in the world. McGregor obviously needs a win very badly to get back into, he's a massive superstar in the sport and to get back into title contention. And then for Poirier, he took this fight over the title fight. You know, and I know some people were criticizing him for it. I think he did the absolute right thing. You know, the kid's worked hard his whole career, and he's got himself into this position with McGregor now, where these guys are going into a trilogy fight. And, you absolutely take that fight.
Dana, before I let you go, anyone beating Usman anytime soon? If John Jones is back, who's the best pound-for-pound fighter in the world the way Usman's fighting?
Usman is the best pound-for-pound fighter in the world. He should be number one. It's a shame that he's not. He is the number one pound-for-pound fighter in the world. He is a bad dude,
and he gets better
every time he fights. And
So tough, Dana. So when you have a grappling or wrestling background, if you become the kind of striker now that Usman is, how do you beat that guy? If you can, if the 100%. Good strikers can't stand up with him, that's the only shot they have. What, are they going to beat him on the ground? He's too strong. Yep. He's too skilled. He makes adjustments too quickly. I don't know. Is he going to move up? Like, what are you going to do with him?
Every time he fights, he looks better. No, we still got great fights with this kid. I mean, you got the Colby Covington rematch,
one of the best
fights I've ever seen,
right,
in the first fight. You got Leon Edwards fighting Nate Diaz this Saturday, and, you know, one of them will be next in line.
Sure,
so
sure.
He's still got some good fights to look forward to.
For sure. It's just with Usman, I feel like, and it's okay, some guys are like this. Like, yes, I think Covington's going to be a good fight, but who do I think is going to win? You know, sometimes there's just a guy who's better than everyone else, and that looks like Usman right now. The great Dana White, ladies and gentlemen. Dana, thanks for coming on the show. Always appreciate it.
Have a great day, brother.
You too. Ultimate Fighter's back. Reality show that brings top MMA prospects together under one roof to compete for a UFC contract is on ESPN+. Stream new episodes every Tuesday only on ESPN+. You can also stream my show, The Max Kellerman Show, along with hours of daily sports talk. Sign up now at ESPNplus.com/UFC. Coming up, would D'Antoni be a good fit, or as Raj likes to call him, D'Antonio, be a good fit for the Celtics as head coach? I'll tell you coming up in No Doubt, a segment we like to call No Doubt or No Doubtio. Raggio, hold on a sec. Let me do this read. Friends, if you're in a job you can't stand or worried your unemployment benefits will be ending, you need to go to mycomputercareer.edu and fill out the free career evaluation form. I've personally spoken with them, and they're so legit, employers are lining up to hire their graduates. In as little as 4 months, you can start your career in the growing cybersecurity and networking fields. Grants covering up to 53% of the cost are available to those who qualify. It ain't rocket science. It's mycomputercareer.edu. Tell them Max sent you. More on D'Antonio.
Hey, O's always make everything
Keller sound better. Kellermenio show. What?
O's make everything sound better, Max.
Yes, on the Max Maxio. Kellerman Showio.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
The Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Also, check me out on the ESPN app and Sirius XM Channel 80. No Doubt coming up, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Did you miss any of the Max Kellerman Show? In that case, you missed an interview with Dana White. We talked about not only UFC 263, but Mayweather against Logan Paul, the Paul brothers, what exhibitions mean to combat sports. Talked about Dana White's pursuit of me for the UFC. Oh, all kinds of juicy things. And you can hear it all if you simply download the podcast, the Max Kellerman Show podcast. Again, you don't have to listen. Just download it because I get credit either way. All right, time for No Doubt. I'm going to get right down to it.
We got you covered.
Let me tell you what I think it means.
No Doubt.
All right, Raj, what do we have?
All right, man. Word on the street is the Packers are digging their feet in the sand, and they're not going to trade their quarterback, Aaron Rodgers. So Aaron Rodgers should retire if the Packers don't trade him.
Nah, son. Ah. All he's got to do is sit out the year. He will never have to retire. As soon as he shows them he's not playing for them anymore, they will trade him, obviously, because don't you want at least 3 first-round picks instead of nothing? Right? Who wouldn't want that? So all he's got to do is stick to his guns, don't play for him, and he'll be playing for the team of his choice shortly.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Hey, Max, it's National Donald Duck Day. You remember him?
Of course.
Yeah. Can you do a Donald Duck impersonation?
I can't. You know, like, I don't
know. Can you? No, it's not my specialty. But hey, Donald Duck is... He's voted this, but I want to see if you agree. He's one of the top 50 cartoon characters of all time.
No doubt, because you need to have one representing those Disney cartoons, and Donald Duck was the best character, right? Donald was better than Mickey. He was better than Goofy. Donald Duck was the best character. So he's got to represent, you know. Daffy Duck was also excellent, right?
Yeah.
I think there are at least 2 ducks in the top 50. Minimum 2 ducks.
Minimum 2 ducks. All right, fair enough.
Right.
Connor, can you do a Donald Duck impersonation? Impression? Can you do it?
No, I absolutely
Connor?
Cannot.
Scrooge McDuck is also in the top. 3 ducks.
Oh, 3. All right, lots of ducks there. Hey, you mentioned this earlier, but I read this someplace that Mike D'Antoni would be a great fit for the Celtics. What say, Max?
Oh, nah, son. D'Antoni needs a muse. He needs Steve Nash or at least Jeremy Lin. He needs James Harden. He needs a ball-dominant offense operator. And I don't see that on the Celtics. Now, maybe he can do it another way. It'd be interesting. Maybe he can use Tatum. But, like, it's not going to be Kemba Walker for long. They're going to trade Kemba. So who is that? It's not Marcus Smart. Who's that going to be on that team? I think that D'Antoni is really good right where he is. On the bench for the Brooklyn Nets.
Agreed. And last one before we hit some of you callers over there. Hey, Max, the current owners of the house that inspired The Conjuring say the home is still haunted. Hey, I know you've been talking about UFOs lately, but Max believes in haunted houses?
No, Max does not believe in any supernatural anything. Nah, son. I don't believe in anything supernatural except... the sports gods. The sports gods exist. We all know it. Do not make the sports gods angry. But that's the only kind of supernatural stuff I believe in.
Ooh, that's right. The sports gods, you say, are preventing the Nets' big 3 from just dominating the world.
That's right. If this, the sports car, I explained this, a naked singularity is like a black, let me give you, I'll run through this really quickly. A black hole occurs when so much matter is in such a small space that it collapses upon itself. Like gravity works because everything with mass in the universe is attracted to each, to other mass. And when there's too much in one space, it just keeps collapsing upon itself into infinity. It gets to an infinitely small and dense, like the mass of a star in a hole that just keeps getting smaller and smaller. And that punctures space-time. But the thing is, you can't ever see any information inside the hole, right? It's called cosmic censorship. That's a singularity. People have been wondering about a naked singularity. Could we somehow unravel a black hole, look into the mystery of the universe, right? And the answer is no, we haven't been able to do it. And I think that's what the basketball gods have done with this Nets team. They said there's too much. We won't let you see the naked singularity, the Nets at full strength. So you can see them when Harden's hurt. You can see them when someone else, when KD's out. But we can't let you see them play all together through an entire playoffs because the universe would explode. You see, that's what the Nets are. And yes, I believe in the basketball gods simply because they exist. And by the way, the sports gods, there's a very, like, if you want your sports team to win, right, you have to make sacrifices to the sports gods. For example, you really want, you live in L.A. Let's say you're an L.A. Rams fan. What are you willing to do for them to win the Super Bowl? Are you willing to sacrifice a couple of USC seasons? UCLA basketball seasons, that may not be enough to win a Super Bowl. The football gods or the sports gods may demand that you sacrifice a Lakers season. You see, then they may bless you with a Super Bowl. But there's a whole system. You know, I'm still figuring it out. Yes, Roger.
So, Max, with the Giants, would you sacrifice your DraftKings dominance for a Giants Super Bowl win?
Yes.
Would you sacrifice beating me, Steve Mason, Bill Wolf, Ben Lyons, and everybody? You'd do it?
Yeah, I would do it. I would sacrifice it. Yeah, okay. And you know that means a lot to me. I'm the draft king, and you are the draft queen.
That means
queen,
I can change the rules. Yeah, I don't have to do a top second when I come in second.
That's right. You get to just win or take all if I say. But yes, I will tell great sports gods, I tell you now, I will sacrifice my draft king's dominance for a Giants Super Bowl this year. Now let's see if it works. And if that wasn't good enough, I may have to make a greater sacrifice. Like, you know, a Yankees season? I don't know if I'll do that.
Ooh.
I don't know if I'd do that. Nah, son. That's a no doubt. Nah, son. I'm sacrificing a Yankee season. Coming up, last take is your take. Brought to you by attorneys Cordell and Cordell. Fair divorce for men. Call 1-866-DADS-LAW. DADSLAW.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio, ESPN Plus, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80. Wherever you get your podcasts, you can get in on it right now. Last take, 888-SAY-ESPN, 729-3776.
You heard First Take?
At least it's good to hear your voice finally, because I know on First Take, I only hear you on the intro and outro.
Now hear Max's last take.
Let me hear your last take. Roland in Michigan, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
I got to disagree with you on the whole of the take that putting substances on the ball isn't as bad as, steroids. I say the only difference is the physical implications of it.
Why? What? And what do you disagree with?
I would say that, if it's damaging the game, and I'm a new baseball fan, so I do have a question on whether it's explicitly written not to put substances on the ball.
Yeah,
or
you can't. It's in the rule book. You can't put substances on the ball, and it's cheating. Gaylord Perry, his autobiography, and he's in the Hall of Fame, won 300 games, me and the spitter. Like, everyone knew Gaylord Perry threw a spitball. Now how Billy Martin used to improve teams so much when he used to manage them, Art Fowler, the pitching coach, taught everyone how to scuff the ball. I mean, like, this is in the culture of baseball, that is accepted cheating. It's like, as I said, and this was Booger McFarland's point on First Take today, there's breaking the speed limit. Like, you know, you're going, it's a 55-mile-an-hour speed limit, you go 63. You're breaking the speed limit. But if a cop pulls you over, you'd be like, I mean, if you saw him and you did it anyway, that'd be disrespectful, right? But if he's hiding and got you with a radar gun, you might say something like, really, 63? The cop might tell you something like, yep. And in other words, this ain't your day. That's very different than going 100. And putting a substance on the ball in baseball is seen like breaking the speed limit by a little bit. And steroids and growth hormone are like going 100. Or sign stealing using technology. It's not a perfect metaphor, I know, because one is of degree and the other is of kind. But it works to, you know. Solomon in Los Angeles, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Hey, Max, you know, one frustrated Laker fan here. It's an either-or question. Going forward with the Lakers, do you say this is the 21-6 team that was rolling before injuries hit them, or you wave a magic wand, doesn't matter, don't worry about salary caps or if the team will trade it or matching salaries, blah, blah, blah. Who do you get rid of? Who do you keep? And who do you go
after?
Here's
the problem. The Lakers have to re-sign Schroeder because they're way past the limit. They're past the cap. They have to grandfather in any kind of valuable players they have. And what they have of value other than LeBron and AD is Schroeder and Talen Horton Tucker, who is a free agent and who they should retain. But I think if before I would sign Schroeder, I would want to know if I could do a sign and trade and who I could get in exchange. Because when you perform like that in the playoffs, maybe you can turn it around, but I don't want to sit around and hope that you do. Go get me a guy who's already shown that he can rise to the occasion. But you know, on the other hand, if they can't get something good in a sign and trade, the Lakers may be stuck with him because he is talented. He can help you in the regular season. Maybe he could turn around in the postseason, turn it around. And given the restraints of having both LeBron and AD on your salary cap, you know, you want to retain as much talent as possible. Terrence in Madison, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Hey, Max, I just want to say really quick, I don't think it's Giannis. I don't think it's Lopez. I don't think it's Holiday. I think it's a coach. I mean, the guy's playing a zone in this game. They're just getting over the top the whole time. They got to play man-to-man. Let Holiday do his thing. He's a great defensive player. And listen, please quit being a Giannis hater. Please.
I agree with you this series, but if they had Harden, what difference would that make? Like, Holiday's a great defensive player on smaller guards, but bigger, like, wings, bigger guards and forwards can roast him. And Holiday's good. He's really good. But what I brought up with Andre Snelling's earlier in the show is that there's a reason Middleton's made a couple of All-Star games in his career. And Holiday, I think, has made one, maybe? It's because game in and game out throughout their careers, they're not as good as some other players. And you're not judging these guys in a vacuum. Everyone in the NBA is amazing. But are they amazing compared to each other? Once you get to this level in the playoffs, the Nets have guys who are amazing compared to everyone else every single year. They have KD, who's better than Giannis. They have Harden, who may also be better than Giannis in the playoffs. And Harden's choked a bit, and he's not even available right now. They have Kyrie, who's better than Middleton or Drew Holiday consistently. They have Blake Griffin, who's been a perennial all-star. They only have one perennial all-star on the Bucks. It's Giannis. So yes about the zone. Yes about, I understand what you're saying, Budenholzer. All that's real. But the issue is, in fact, Giannis needs guys with higher pitched talent to be his second and third best player than Holiday and Middleton. One of those two guys could be the third best player. But now you need a second best player better than either one of those guys. Jason in Maine, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Hey, Max, how's it going?
Go ahead, Jason.
So I heard your take on how you didn't feel that doctoring the balls was as much of a problem as, say, steroids is. And honestly, I don't know the answer, but I'm wondering, I've heard this take from a few people, and I'm wondering, is it based on any statistics or just your personal feelings? Because, I mean, for all I know, that spin rate's affecting.
Yeah, you
how
might
much
be right about that.
Hit the ball.
I have to. No, it's not based on numbers. You might be right. It may be killing baseball that everyone's doing it because it seems like everyone is, right? Spin rates are up all over. Strikeout per nines are up all over. No hitters are being thrown every other game. And maybe it's out of control. Yeah. No, I don't. That's just my personal feeling. My feeling is that the culture of baseball accepts doctoring the ball and has accepted it, you know, forever. Mike Scott, 1986, all of a sudden, Mike Scott's the greatest pitcher anyone's ever seen. He was pretty good before that, but he was, you know, in 85. But 86, he was, and they had commercials of him, like, doctoring the ball with sandpaper and eventually a drill. And, like, it was a joke. Like, in other words, it's openly accepted. You would never see a commercial like that about a dude, you know, sticking a needle in his arm. You just wouldn't. Because it's the culture accept, you know, one is culturally accepted, one isn't. But you may be right. Maybe under more rigorous analysis, it's all nonsense and it's equally bad. I can't assert that it's not and prove that at this moment. Steven in Los Angeles, go quick.
Let's get back to Clipper basketball. Mm-hmm. The last possession.
You got 20 seconds.
The last possession of the game, Tyronn Lue should have called timeout. Paul George didn't have a shot to take.
Monty Morris did, and I thought he lost with a shot fake. I thought he had an open look. You got to just credit the other team sometimes. Gobert came back, made a great defensive play. They won game one. It's going to be a long series. They won game one barely at home. Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio. Shanae and Golic Jr. coming right up. I'll see you tomorrow.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.